This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 29th of November 2019. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. This is Peter Walker. I'm emergency standing in for Roz, whose voice appears to have left her. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited their extracts for this week. And so we'll begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you have received from us, please first check the box is plugged into the mains before you telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. I'll repeat that, 01962 711 998. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And one more note for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. So let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And myself, Peter Walker. Moving on to the news, here are the headlines. Wallets on wheels, packed church for climate hustings, and public's final public say on proposed incinerator. And the first headline story from Claire, please.
Wallets on wheels. Winchester City Council clocked up millions of pounds in profit from parking charges last year, a record high. Figures have revealed that the authority raised £4.7 million, the highest profit since comparable records began in 2008-09. An AA spokesperson said the numbers showed councils see drivers as wallets on wheels. All the profit made by the council last year came from off-street parking, such as local authority-run car parks. But the information from the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government said it cost the authority £246,000. Jack Cousins, head of roads policy for the AA, said, "When it comes to parking charges, many councils see drivers as wallets on wheels. At a time when budgets are stretched, raking in parking fees seems to be a tool used to try and fill the council's coffers. Some of the incomes are eye-watering, so drivers want to see that cash reinvested in local roads to eliminate potholes and poor road markings." The rise in profits from parking in Winchester reflects the trend across England and echoes that of neighbouring authority, such as Eastleigh, profited by £1.5 million, up 31% on the previous year. However, nearby Test Valley saw a drop into earning of 15%, with a payoff of £1 million, and Southampton saw a drop of 12%, making £6 million. David Renard, transport spokesman for the Local Government Association, said councils were on the side of motorists and shoppers, and that parking policies aim to make sure there are spaces available for residents, high streets are kept vibrant, and traffic is kept moving. He added, "Any income raised through on-street parking charges and fines is spent on running parking services, and any surplus is only spent on essential transport projects, such as filling potholes, supporting concessionary bus fares to help reduce congestion, and other local transport projects that benefit high streets and local economies. A spokesperson for Winchester City Council said, "Parking income helps to fund the cost of car park operations. The council is also investing in measures to address traffic congestion, cut carbon emissions, and improve air quality, which includes upgrades to city car parks, installing electric vehicle charging, extending park and ride, and works that contribute to longer-term plans for travel and transport. This will be further supported by a new parking management strategy that will be published later this year."
Packed church for climate hustings. Three of Winchester's parliamentary candidates went head-to-head at Monday night's packed climate hustings. Liberal Democrat Paula Ferguson, Labour's George Baker, and Theresa Skelton of the Justice and Anti-Corruption Party attended the event organised by Winchester Climate Crisis Alliance. The evening was introduced by Sir David King, climatologist and former scientific advisor to the government, who described climate change as the most important issue on the planet. A mixture of questions, some prepared and others from the audience, were put to the panel. When asked how she would work on transport in Winchester to help reduce carbon dioxide emissions, Lib Dem Paula Ferguson said, "We would add stable transport as part of the planning process. There's no point in building new houses if the plans are not endorsing sustainable transport from the start." She also emphasised that Brexit needs to be stopped. "Stop Brexit, stop it, because in the EU we are part of a 20-country bloc which has a loud voice on the global stage. If we leave, the Conservatives will rip up the existing environmental protections that we have." George Baker said it's important to nurture society into greener ways. He added, "We'll give 3% of GDP to make green projects happen, and we will reach net zero by the 2030s. The green industrial revolution is the way forward. We must help jobs and businesses bring in the technology necessary for this and make sure businesses are held accountable for how they deal with their carbon footprint." George also said that his party would ban fracking immediately and plan to build 9,000 wind turbines. Justice and Anti-Corruption Party's Theresa Skelton told the crowd, "Look, let's be honest, my party's not going to be in government, but we have to protect the right to protest. I don't have to remind the Extinction Rebellion people what happened in London when police made unlawful arrests over peaceful protests. You have to make your opinions on climate change known, because you can't underestimate the power of people aiming to make mega bucks on green land in Hampshire." Steve Bryan was unable to attend due to his father being desperately ill. He told the Chronicle, "I was really sad to miss this event, not least because David King was speaking, and he's a bit of a legend, to be honest, hugely respected by many of us in Parliament. I'm sure the right approach is to work with, not fight, the market to deliver 2 million new high-quality jobs in clean growth. We are rightly ambitious." Andrew Wainwright, candidate for the Green Party, who stood down as part of the Remain Alliance, did not attend, despite the organisers saying he would.
Public's final public say on proposed incinerator. The final public consultation saw dozens turn out to discuss the controversial incinerator on Wednesday. Specialists from Wheelaborator Technologies spoke to concerned residents at Victoria Hall in Sutton Scotney about the proposed plant off the A303 near Barton Stacey. People voiced a variety of issues, with traffic and environmental impact being common concerns. Margaret Atfield said, When they proposed this, I thought they must be joking. It only takes a minor accident at some narrow junctions to shut down the town. Celia Ferguson said, I'm most concerned about water and where it will all come from. They can't create water from nowhere, and there are people around here who aren't even on mains drainage. Taking more water out of the ground could affect our fishing industry and the wildlife in the rivers. The company said their assessment found roads in the area had the capacity to handle all vehicles during construction and running, and effects would be negligible. Water for power generation is planned to come from captured rainwater and mains supply, which would be handled by Southern Water. South Wanston resident Frank Street said, My concern would be, if this didn't go through, what are we going to do with all the waste? There is always a lot of fear of the unknown, but we can't send it to landfill. Tony Langridge, resident of Sutton Scotney, said, It's a very slick operation, and scepticism is required. I don't think they're taking climate change seriously, and I don't believe the impact assessments they are giving. It is an industrial area, but I'm against the design of it. There have been better plans for this area, but they were NIMBYed out, and I expect there will be a few NIMBYists here tonight. Stuart Rippon of Keep Test Valley Beautiful said, We have had a few people say this is NIMBYism, but it's a very big backyard. This would affect the whole area, with its traffic, its emissions, and the site of the plant. The company expects to submit their application in spring 2020. Thank you. We'll have the death notices now, followed by Claire with Christian comment. Commander Robert Bob Duncan Commander, on the 11th of November 2019, after a long illness, aged 83.
Jarvis Ruth Ethel, née Smith Jarvis, passed away peacefully on 5th November, aged 89.
Man Renee May, formerly Digents Man. After a short illness, passed away peacefully, aged 87, on the 20th of November in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital.
Montgomery, James Montgomery, on the 16th of November, aged 74, at home in Stockbridge.
Perkis, Brian Perkis of Alsford, passed away peacefully on 17th November, aged 82.
Silk. Colin Alfred Moore Silk, peacefully on the 18th of November, aged 89 years.
Titman, Peter James Titman, passed away on the 17th of November, aged 86. And now, Christian comment. Liz Tatham is the contributor of this week's Christian comment. It is headed, A Light Amid the Gloom. Claire, would you like to read that to us, please?
Christmas is coming. All the signs are out there. The Winchester Christmas Market and ice skating rink are open. The city is full of visitors. The lights are on, and one of our Hampshire town centres has a very attractive marmot on skis as its centrepiece. It even hit the national news. Yes, Christmas is about Jesus coming to live amongst us. His birth, but it is also about some hope and light in the winter gloom. I believe all of those ways of marking the coming of our Lord in joy and fun are a reminder for us that there is light in darkness. Let us enjoy them all. Christians also know Christmas is coming because last Sunday was the feast of Christ the King. It was the last Sunday in the church's year when we remember that he was raised from his death and reigns an universal king with his Father in heaven. And so, at the end of the year, the cycle begins again. We celebrate his birth and all its accompanying signs and wonders of angels, shepherds, magi, and a rising star to declare his coming in Bethlehem 2,000 years ago. First, though, we have a month of reflection while we wait. The season of Advent starts next Sunday, 1st of December. Our readings in churches will be of prophecy and welcome. John the Baptist will prepare the way, whilst Old Testament prophets speak of his coming and his suffering. Even at his birth, he became a refugee, fleeing the cruelty of Herod. If you are a Christian, you will join your brothers and sisters in wait through prayer, reflection, Bible readings, and thinking on what it all means. If you're not sure what it means, you can join in the wait too. Take four candles and light one each week until you have them all lit and Christmas is round the corner. Stop by the Churches Together chalet in the market and just have a chat. No pressure. Listen to some seasonal music and think for a while. Read the scriptures which tell of the birth and ask yourself what they mean to you. Try Luke 2, verses 1 to 20, or the story told in a different way in Matthew 1, 18 2 to 23. If you don't have a Bible, go online or pop into your local church. Read it slowly and like you've never heard it before. Or just sit and be still and quiet for a while each day until Christmas and think your own thoughts. Whatever is your way, take some time out of the hustle and bustle and quietly wait and see what happens. The next time I write for this column, Christmas will be right upon us. I hope I don't look back and wonder why I didn't take the time to be still and reflect each day, so that I can absorb the message and the meaning and live it out for others as well as for myself. And that was written by Liz Tatum.
An EU U-turn. Sir, Kim Gottlieb stated in April that having voted to leave the EU, he now wants to remain. He is one of Winchester's more distinguished residents and has saved us from the Silver Hill development. My journey has been in the opposite direction. Having voted to remain, I now want to leave the EU. I'm concerned about the way the EU has negotiated, particularly with reference to the Galileo satellite. Britain gave €1 billion to the Galileo satellite, worth about £860 million. The EU said it would not refund this. It also said it would not share military secrets that the Galileo satellite had with Britain. Philip Hammond, then Chancellor of the Exchequer, warned that Britain might be forced to go it alone, at a whopping cost of perhaps £5 billion. The Observer said this was a disgrace. The Observer, with the Financial Times and the Daily Mirror, has been consistently for Remain and opposed to us leaving. To quote from the Observer of May 27, 2018, when EU officials claim, as they did last week, that allowing a non-member country, namely the UK, access to sensitive security-related information would breach the sovereignty of the EU, they seriously overreach. What is an affront to sovereignty is the Commission's refusal to contemplate reimbursing the €1 billion the UK has invested in the project. Here, in a nutshell, lies the problem at the heart of the Brexit negotiations. Despite numerous humiliating concessions by Britain on budget payments, citizens' rights, a transition period, and, prospectively, on customs arrangements, Brussels officialdom believes that the UK wants something for nothing. Now, that may be true of hard Tory Brexiters. It's not true of many people in the UK. They know that the price to be paid for Brexit will be very high indeed. they do not need the Commission's gratuitous, self-defeating and deliberately punitive strictures to remind them of the chastening fact. And that's Rupert Pitt, St Cross Road, Winchester.
Outstanding building for Hyde. As the applicant for development of my proposed new home in King Alfred Place, mentioned in Pauline Moore's letters last week, entitled Inappropriate Proposal for Hyde, I should like to respond to some of her key points. She mentioned that the site is on a very prominent plot. Exactly so. That is why my architect and I wanted to create an outstanding building which would reflect the history and standing of the location. Rather than being solipsistic, as she suggests, our design takes account architecturally of the buildings which had previously been on the site since the 12th century onwards. A pastiche development, as proposed by some, would fail to respect the historic nature of this key gateway, which shapes the approach to the contemporary development of Hyde Abbey Gardens and its clever reflection of the memory of Hyde Abbey. Our design is not, quote, squeezed and plonked, but, on the contrary, has been carefully crafted so as to sit neatly into a rather unusual space. While views will, of course, vary, I have undertaken extensive consultation, and I'm aware of a number of people, including local residents, who enjoy the originality of what we have created and appreciate its careful detailing in materials, which could not be seen well in the image as reproduced. Hyde is an important area of enormous historical significance. It is rightly a conservation area. Our aim is to enhance and extend its rich architectural heritage. Those who want a better understanding of our plans should visit the City Council's Planning Department website. This from Dr. Tim Paget of King Alfred Place in Winchester.
This letter is headed Be Positive. I certainly resonate with Jane Baldock's comments, Letters Chronicle, November the 14th, regarding the scarcity of positive topics published in letters to the editor. Typically, readers will tend to campaign or voice opinions on issues that essentially deserve attention. However, positivity is an essential element in maintaining an outlook that is not instinctively or proactively seeking a negative aspect of anything and everything. Personally, I do endeavour to address a situation that I believe requires critical attention with positive undertone, although rather challenging in the current climate. We certainly do live in a beautiful location where Winchester is an historically significant and mostly friendly and welcoming city. Within a few minutes of walk of King Alfred the Great statue, rivers, hills and beautiful walks greet visitors and residents alike. Negativity is about moaning, complaining and essentially a glass half empty posture, but without presenting solutions. Positivity delivers a far greater impact, promotes dialogue, and is typically infectious. My advice? Spread the word and champion positivity. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Judith Martin asks for a reassessment. So, as Oscar Wilde didn't quite say, to lose one judicial review may be regarded as a misfortune. To lose two looks like carelessness. To lose three within 5 years looks like an ill-advised counsel. The first, of course, was Silver Hill, 2015. Then the station approach. The consent order for the judicial review on the station approach was rubber-stamped by the court on November the 21st, having been agreed by the council on October the 22nd. That was when the council's legal department wrote to the City of Winchester Trust's legal advisers saying that they would quash their own planning permission. Which makes the council's comment, as quoted by the Chronicle on October 31st, that it was waiting to hear the judgment from the court, a little unconvincing. everyone concerned should be reassured that they conceded after the first legal shot, thus saving a great deal of money and anxiety. One of the grounds found by the Trust's QC included the opinion that the council had acted irrationally. As it happens, it wasn't necessary to prove that ground. The council conceded other grounds. But one area of irrationality might be that council officers and the previous lead party feel it is acceptable not to be open and honest about what they're doing or the money they're spending. The third judicial review decision regarding 200 homes at Knowle seems to have come as a surprise to most people. Not only is it extraordinary that a development of that size should be decided only by officers, it's also extraordinary that the lead party thought it wasn't worth discussing with the then opposition. Then, to accuse the University Hospital Southampton Trust of self-promotion for demanding a contribution from developers to help accommodate the healthcare requirements of extra residents simply takes the breath away. Few, if any, of the recommendations made following the first judicial review have been implemented. Three judicial reviews must surely emphasise the need for a major reassessment of officers' powers and skills. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And this one is entitled Radio Appeal. After 35 years' service to patients in hospital, the charity Winchester Radio launched our community radio service on 94.7 FM across the city in March. The service, based at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, is run entirely by volunteers from the Winchester area and is already producing over 70 hours of original local programming every week. As well as playing great music from the 1940s onwards, we promote the activities of other local grassroots charities, community clubs and groups, and promote the living of active, sustainable lifestyles engaged with the local community. Truly local radio, for Winchester, from Winchester, by Winchester. With the growth of our volunteer team, we've outgrown our current accommodation. As we're all volunteers, programmes are produced at times that fit in with our lives. This means that often we're already tripping over ourselves in our current location. We've even installed a second studio in the office, which brings its own problems. Before we can significantly grow our team or the amount of programming we produce to meet our aspirations, we need to relocate. We've been offered a larger, more accessible space, rent-free, by the hospital, but it needs to be converted for our use. We've already raised half of the cost and we're now crowdfunding the remaining £50,000. I appeal to any of your readers who wish to see our community radio service flourish to please donate whatever they can afford to allow us to provide the radio service that Winchester deserves. I can assure you that all the money raised will go directly to the studio appeal. No one at Winchester Radio is paid. You can find more details of our crowdfunding campaign at https://acfcrowdfunder.co.uk/winchradio. If you need more information, please see our own website at Winchester Radio or leave us a message on 01962 603 947. Thank you in advance. This is from Nigel Dallard, Trustee and Treasurer of the Winchester Radio at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital.
This letter is headed Cycle Danger. Why are bicycles no longer fitted with bells? When I and friends go walking along the many tracks and paths in and around Winchester, suddenly, silently, and without any warning, a cycle comes up behind and shoots off. If we should move slightly, it could be extremely dangerous. Indeed, one hears of many an accident due to the speed of these cyclists, who don't even call out when they're overtaking. It does spoil enjoyment of the countryside to be constantly looking over one's shoulder. Sally Winterbourne, Lower Barracks, Winchester.
And yet another planning issue. Much needed, it says. There cannot be any sense in providing any form of commuter parking within the intensive developments at King's Barton. However, a major facility in the vicinity of Three Maids Roundabout would attract vehicles leaving the A34 as well as those coming from villages to the north. As a frequent driver into Winchester along this route, I would become a user of such a facility, which apart from obvious environmental benefits within King's Barton, would also reduce pressure on traffic flow and car parks in central Winchester. An illustration of the need for such a park and ride is that the Cattle Market car park on Andover Road, opposite the Esso garage, is completely full by 10 o'clock on most weekdays. I can't understand why such a park and ride service from the north of Winchester has been overlooked for so long, and consider the proposal now deserves priority attention, says Tim Lowry of Newton Stacey.
And this one is entitled Fur on Sale. Despite assurances from the manager of the Winchester Cathedral Christmas Market that no real fur will be sold there, I have it on good authority that the same man who was banned from selling it there again today is selling items which are decorated with real fur. Much of the fur imported into this country is from China, where domestic cats and dogs are stolen from their owners and are grabbed and stuffed into crates as many as 20 at a time and transported for miles with no food or water. When they arrive, many still wearing their collars given to them by their owners watch on as their travelling companions are dispatched. In all my years as an animal rights supporter, I have seldom felt so shaken and shocked to the core as I was on reading about and seeing photographs of the atrocities committed by fur trade workers towards helpless sentient creatures. Islington Council are the first in the country to have banned the sale of all real fur in Islington, and it would be a great accolade for Winchester if we could follow their good example and be the second. As for the cathedral and its Christmas market, it seems that they wish goodwill to all men and to hell with the animals. This from Daphne Deer, Fairdown Close and Giles Hill. There then follows a letters editor's note. A cathedral spokeswoman said, "Thank you for bringing this matter to our attention. We wish to clarify that neither the Christmas market nor Winchester Cathedral actively or knowingly support the sale of real fur items. Any real fur items found on sale within the Christmas market are asked to be removed immediately from the stallholder's stand. We have approached the stallholders in question on this occasion, and we have asked them to remove any real fur items with immediate effect, to which they have complied."
'Tis the season. The lawn is covered in white hoarfrost. There's a definite nip in the air, and the bright sunshine highlights the colours of the leaves on the trees as autumn turns to winter. The shops are gearing up for the Christmas and New Year festivities, with shelves laden with luxury foods and gifts galore. My thoughts turn to our wildlife. There is now no dawn chorus to speak of, as the birds are faced with very cold nights. Their priority becomes finding enough to eat, and many will be thankful for the kind people who regularly put out food for them. Of course, some of our birds migrate to warmer climes, whilst others visit us from colder countries. Snow and ice can bring real problems for us all, but it also has a lighter side. Fun can come from something as simple as building a snowman, rolling a giant snowball, or sliding down a slope on a toboggan. Whatever the weather, we cannot change it, but we can be sure that it will always be a topic of conversation. Daphne E. Smith, The Pastures, Cheriton.
Thank you, everybody. And now your say. Richard, will you take that for us, please?
Yes. It's about the fact that the cinema chain View has pulled a gang film after significant incidents, so-called, at cinemas on the day it was released. Zach White, 29, marketing executive of Alsford Road. A lot of films are violent. I think young people have accessed this through social media and online, and it has provoked them. Paul Havard, 49, patron decorator of Winchester. Make different cinemas for films like it. View are strict on age limits, though. Online coverage might have provoked them. Ken Day, 73, retired from the Navy of Domham Road. Films are too violent. There's far too much sensation. And in this case, I think gang warfare has been sensationalised. And Jenny Appleton, retired of High Street Bishops Waltham. Some films need violence. But in this case, the topic was too sensitive.
Thank you, Richard. Have you got any views on that?
Well, I've not seen the film. Indeed, I couldn't, could I? It's been pulled. But I understand from the reviews that actually it's not a violent film and doesn't espouse violence either. So I think some of this is maybe a little misplaced.
I've heard the same thing. And I think it's, you know, you're verging on censorship here. So I'm not so sure they should pull it either. But anyway, that's just my view. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That is 01962 860 and 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. You could even drop in when you're in Winchester. And now we have Chronicle Comment. The editor's headline this week is Fake Newspapers Are Clearly Wrong. The advice is clear from the News Media Association, which represents national, regional and local newspapers, including the Basingstoke Gazette and the Hampshire Chronicle. Political parties should not be seeking to copy the look and feel of independent local newspapers with their campaigning material. By scrutinising candidates on behalf of the public and communities across the UK, local news brands play a vital role in upholding democracy. Dressing up party political material as independent journalism undermines this and damages trust in both news media and politicians. The Winchester and Chandlersford Liberal Democrats' misuse, as reported on page 3, is clearly wrong. They have perfectly good news publications of their own, as do the other parties, without having to create fake newspapers. Some people on social media sneer and belittle papers such as the Hampshire Chronicle, and have accused us of political bias. But we just go where the facts take us, and we get criticism from all political parties, which just proves our neutrality. And now we have first person. Ron Allison writes on the joy of friends. Richard, would you like to read that to us, please?
With pleasure. I don't imagine that many of you, indeed any of you, will need reminding of the pleasures brought by having good friends. From childhood through to the school years, then on to the teens and twenties, with all the varied experiences offered, friendships are the vital factors that influence our development, together, of course, with our families. Among these relationships are some that stand out as a special, and from among them may well come one extremely special one, a partner for life. It has to be admitted that in some cases it takes more than one attempt to get it right. But when it happens, wow. And then at times a friendship develops and friends of friends become friends of yours. And you watch your children as they make friends, fall out with them, make it up with them and become friends again. These thoughts on my part follow the recent death of my greatest and closest friend, Roger Knight. A month older than me, he and his family came into my life when we were just about 10 and starting our time at Taunton School in Southampton. or rather in Bournemouth, for the school was evacuated during the war along the Hampshire coast to share a brand new building with Bournemouth Grammar School. This arrangement lasted until 1945, when the Bournemouthians were at last able to have their school to themselves. We changed as we grew up, of course, but neither 2 years of national service nor the arrival of other friends and colleagues changed the basic firmness of our friendship. And almost before we knew it, we were standing as the other's best man. Soon now, more than 60 years later, and 78 after we first met, I will be recalling Roger, his life and his faith, when I speak at his funeral service. All these thoughts are, of course, very personal. Thinking now of our lives on a much wider scale, is it not the case that these days we seem to live in a very confrontational atmosphere? Obviously, our politicians are going to be seen to be opposing each other, even when the situation demands a sensible compromise and pooling of ideas and talents. However, we do seem to value and perhaps enjoy a more competitive lifestyle than is always wise. Despite that, it's still perfectly possible for two people to oppose each other politically and remain firm friends, sharing time and interests. They might even find themselves sitting next to each other at St Mary's Stadium and experiencing the same emotions that at times overwhelm Saints supporters. I saw my first Southampton match at the Old Dell with Roger and his father over Easter 1945. Our star player at that time was Don Roper, whom I later got to know when he returned to the Saints after a long spell at Arsenal. The Saints were then in the old second division, but we believed, and the glory days duly came. Happy memories as well of Ted Bates and Laurie McEnemy. So my final thoughts are of gratitude to those friends who at close range or from maybe a distance have lightened the load and increased the happiness. It's no wonder Friends become such a television hit on both sides of the Atlantic.
Thank you very much, Richard. There's no letter from Westminster this week, so now we move on to historical items, with the usual mini news clips starting from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago. I'll start off with 200 years ago, on Monday, November the 29th, 1819. At an adjourned quarter sessions of the peace for this county, held this day at the Grand Jury Chamber in this city, an insolvent debtor was remanded for 5 years for having fraudulently admitted to insert his schedule some fixtures. Upwards of 800 men of the out pensioners have arrived at Fort Cumberland to form the 2nd Battalion of Royal Veterans. We understand that upwards of 6,000 of the out pensioners have refused to enrol themselves, and consequently they will lose their pensions.
And from 100 years ago, Saturday, November the 29th, 1919, the local committee under the Profiteering Act sat at the Guildhall, Winchester, on Monday afternoon for the first time to investigate two allegations of profiteering against Winchester tradesmen. The first case on the agenda was a complaint by a resident of the Worthies against Messrs Butt and Sons, Boot and Shoemakers, High Street, Winchester, with reference to the charge for a packet of Stubbs's dry cleaner. And the second item, we are what our past has made us, in form and feature, mind and soul. What is true of us as individuals is also true of us as a nation. And whilst we are proud of every detail of our family history, those of us who have any, we are as a people strangely indifferent to our national story. Of all the great nations, England is the most ignorant of our own history.
Fifty years ago, Saturday, November the 29th, 1969. The Central Electricity Generating Board announced this week their shortlist of possible sites in South Hampshire for a nuclear power station. They are at Nursling, near the electricity substation, northwest of Southampton, at Dibden, at Fawley, on a site adjoining the present power station, excuse me, at Chilling, on the opposite side of Southampton Water, at Browndown, between Leon the Solent and Gosport, and at Tipner, in the Portsmouth Harbour area. An official statement released by the board on Monday said the investigations would be part of the continuing process of seeking sites for new power stations required to meet the growing demand for electricity. And in the second section, in dismissing appeals by Southampton Airport Limited against the refusal of planning permission for the extension of the hard runway at both ends of Eastleigh Airport, the Minister of Housing and Local Government has stated that he has no doubt that his proper course in the public interest was to accept the recommendations made by Mr. D. F. Offord, his inspector, who had conducted a public inquiry into the appeals last May, lasting for a week. In his report to the minister, the inspector said he was concerned regarding some of the houses at Campbell Road, Eastleigh, where some of the noise levels would be far in excess of those accepted at the nearest built-up areas to London Airport.
And finally, 25 years ago, Friday, November the 25th, 1994. First item, the death sentence on Winchester Magistrates Court will be activated in 4 months' time, the Lord Chancellor this week rejecting a last-ditch appeal to save the historic facility. The decision has been received with shock and bitterness by campaigners in Winchester. The court, which is mentioned in written records dating back to 1269, will now sit for the last time on March the 31st next year. And the second item, a final decision has been made to go ahead with building of a church and 7 classrooms at Downs Road in South Wanston. The plan has been controversial since it was first proposed and drew vociferous opposition from some local people when it was discussed by county councillors on October the 31st. The Roads and Development Subcommittee agreed at the time to proceed, but the final decision was only taken on Wednesday following changes to the scheme. As the local county member, Anne Bailey, pointed out after Wednesday's meeting, this is a nice solution to the very cramped situation in the school. The school will be able to use the church during the week for extra space, especially for music and drama, and there will be shared administration rooms. That means the present tiny admin space can be remodelled for use by the early years children. It's going to be a very exciting scheme. Thank you very much, everybody. Now let's have a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. Richard, can you please enlighten us?
Well, I have a few items here from the cathedral, which of course is always busy at Christmas. And the first item is a family carol service on Sunday, December the 8th, and indeed on the 15th as well at 3:30. Visitors to the cathedral's Christmas market and ice rink are especially welcome. Congregational carols led by the cathedral choir. On Tuesday the 17th, Wednesday the 18th and Friday the 20th, cathedral carol services. Wonderful services filled with beautiful music sung by the cathedral choir. The first service is ticketed with priority booking for the cathedral community. The second and third are not ticketed and all are welcome. So the second and third would be on Wednesday the 18th and Friday the 20th at 6:30 p.m. On Friday, December the 13th at 7 p.m, the Cathedral Christmas Concert, an evening of music, laughter and delight featuring Winchester Cathedral Choir and award-winning comedian Hugh Dennis, star of BBC One's Outnumbered, Radio 4's The Now Show, or should that be The Now Show, and BBC Two's Mock the Week. And on Sunday, December the 22nd at 3:30, Benjamin Britten's wonderful Ceremony of Carols, sung by the choristers of Winchester Cathedral, a free event with a retiring collection. So all services are free, of course, and tickets are available from the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275, 01962 857 275.
Many thanks, Richard. Now, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 30th of November, the sun will set at 4:02 p.m. And on Wednesday the 4th of December, the sun will rise at 7:50 a.m. and will set at 4 p.m. And now on to a brief review of the headlines of general news. Claire, can we have your first article, please?
Famous faces become medical charity patrons. The man behind some of the world's best-known musicals has given his support to the work of a Hampshire charity. Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber and wife Madeline have joined the Hampshire Medical Fund as joint patrons. The charity buys the latest equipment for use across Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, including Royal County Hampshire Hospital in Winchester. Lord and Lady Lloyd Webber took time out of their busy schedules to visit Basingstoke, Stoke and North Hampshire Hospital, seeing firsthand the difference the charity is making. Emergency medicine consultant Dr. James Kerr showcased new clinical education technology at the hospital, which simulates real-life scenarios to train staff in the emergency departments. Lord and Lady Lloyd Webber also spoke to Mr. Richard Hindley, consultant urologist, about the latest technology being used at Hampshire hospitals to treat men with prostate issues with the help of the fund. Mr. Hindley presented Rezum, a pioneering treatment first trialled at Basingstoke Hospital that helps men suffering with enlarged prostates, and the high-intensity focused ultrasound technique which removes prostate tissue. After speaking with some of the clinicians who have benefited from the equipment bought by the charity, Andrew and Madeline remarked, "We are honoured and delighted to become patrons of the Hampshire Medical Fund. By funding equipment that would not currently be available through normal NHS budgets, the Hampshire Medical Fund allows staff at the hospitals to provide the latest treatments for their patients. It also helps to ensure that the best staff stay in Hampshire. The charity was started by our friend and neighbour, Henry Carnarvon, in 1981 in order to help his local hospital. Following his death, his wife Jeannie became patron, and it is from her we take on the exciting role of joint patrons. We share Henry and Jeannie's vision that support for our hospitals plays a vital role in helping them to better serve our community. We have enjoyed meeting some of the teams involved and hearing how equipment supplied by the charity is being used to help patients across Hampshire. The Lloyd Webbers were joined on their tour of Basingstoke Hospital by Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals, and Charity Trustee and Consultant Cardiologist Dr. Andrew Bishop. Speaking after the patron's visit, Dr. Bishop said, "We are thrilled to have Madeline and Andrew's support at this busy time for the fund, which has recently expanded to cover all three of the hospitals run by the Trust."
Hampshire, we're told, is a top spot for treasure. Hampshire is one of the country's best spots for buried treasure, with hundreds of discoveries in recent years. The British Museum says the scale of artefacts unearthed across the country exceeds expectations, with reported finds showing little sign of dipping any time soon. Detectorists made 68 discoveries in Hampshire last year. Statistics from the Museum and Department for Digital Culture, Media and Sport show. The number of recorded treasure finds has continued to climb since records started in 2012, with a whopping 348 discoveries made over the period, the country's eighth biggest haul. The Treasure Act defines treasure as finds older than 300 years. These include coins, prehistoric metal objects, and artefacts that are at least 10% precious metals, such as gold or silver. Anyone who thinks they have struck a hidden hoard has to tell the coroner within 2 weeks so the court can hold an inquest. If they don't, they face an unlimited fine or up to 3 months behind bars. Two detectorists were jailed last week for theft of a huge Viking hoard. Local and national museums are given the chance to buy any pieces a coroner rules as treasure. Recently, two items have been declared as treasure. A piece of twist golden torque from the Bronze Age was discovered on farmland in Swanmore, and a brooch from the 14th century was found near Hursley. A golden ring-shaped item was also retrieved by Waltham Chase detectorist Geoffrey Slingsby in August 2018, who described the 35mm long brooch as a cracking bit of kit. Following the declarations, the finder does not leave empty-handed, as they will be paid a sum, depending on the haul's value. Last year, 1,096 treasure troves were reported across England, Wales and Northern Ireland, 191 of which came from the South East. Professor Michael Lewis, head of Portable Antiquities and Treasure at the British Museum, said, "Given the variety of the objects being reported, from prehistoric hoards to post-medieval buttons, what they tell us about the past varies significantly, but there's no doubt that some of the most famous treasure finds, such as the Staffordshire hoard, have completely transformed how we understand Britain's past, all the more remarkable as most of these finds are found by interested amateurs, not professional archaeologists. The main purpose of the Act is to ensure that the most important finds end up in museum collections for all to enjoy, and to that end, over 200 museums across England and Wales have benefited from the acquisition of treasure."
And finally, a very sad event, this one entitled "Tributes Paid to Oliver, Age 19. The parents of a University of Winchester student who died following a collision on the A34 have paid tribute to their son as a kind and considerate young man. Police were called at 4:45 a.m. last Tuesday following a collision between a lorry and a pedestrian on the northbound carriageway near Kingsworthy. The pedestrian, named as Oliver Washington, aged 19, of Billericay, Essex, was pronounced dead at the scene. Oliver's parents, Gither and John, paid tribute to him in a statement. They said, "We are devastated by the loss of our only son, Oliver. He was kind, considerate, and we are so proud of the young man he had become. He loved travelling and was a keen skier. He was really enjoying his university course and looking forward to a career in event management. Last summer, he began volunteering for Cancer Research UK as part of his Gold Duke of Edinburgh Award, which he had recently received. He loved helping out at Race for Life events and was planning to help again next year. We have decided that all donations and money raised in Oliver's memory will go to CRUK. The University of Winchester, where Oliver was a first-year student, have also paid tribute. A university spokesman said, "We are deeply saddened to learn of Oliver's tragic death, and our thoughts and prayers are with his family and friends at this difficult time. Oliver was passionate about his subject, event management, and was loved by other students in his cohort, as well as the programme teaching team. He will be missed by his friends and fellow students here at Winchester. Police investigations into the exact circumstances of the collision, including why Mr. Washington was on the A34, are ongoing. Anyone with information about the collision or who may have dash cam footage from the area, please contact the police on 101. The inquest has been opened in Winchester into the death. Senior Central Hampshire Coroner Christopher Wilkinson on Monday adjourned the inquest until May the 18th. The hearing heard that consultant pathologist Dr. Balvinder Shoker had carried out a post-mortem at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and reported the cause of death as multiple injuries resulting from a road traffic collision.
Just what the doctors ordered, a park run in the mud. Oh dear. Three of Winchester's doctors' surgeries joined forces last Saturday to take on the task of marshalling a park run. Doctors, staff and patients from Friarsgate, St Clement's and St Paul's practices wanted to help promote the benefits of participating in local park run events as a way of improving both physical and mental well-being. Despite the mud and far from ideal conditions, 346 people turned up for Winchester's 335th park run at River Park Recreation Ground. These 5-kilometre events are open to everyone. They are free, safe and easy to take part in. The organisers are keen to emphasise that these are not races, they are runs. Participants do like to set their personal targets, though. Walkers and those wanting to participate with pushchairs and dogs on leads are also welcome. Just as important are the volunteer roles, and not all volunteers are runners. They like the opportunity to become involved and socialise with others in a local event. They take place every Saturday morning at 9 a.m.
Thank you, everyone. And I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. But before we go, another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 711 998. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and to our editors, Gordon and Liz. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Bye.
And myself, Peter. Goodbye. Standing in from Roz, until the next time, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick back in the wallet when you have finished with it, and return it to us as soon as possible. Thank you.